Please join me in welcoming our speaker tonight, Barbara C.
Hi, I'm Barbara. I'm an alcoholic. Normally, the gal that was scheduled for tonight is very ill, Sally, and so I was asked to take her place this evening. And she wanted me to tell you all that she will share her story with you at a later date, so you can be excited about that, because I've heard it. It's a great story. Anyway, my sobriety date is August 16th, 1992, and I had no intention of ever being a recovering alcoholic, because in order to be a recovering alcoholic, you have to be an alcoholic. And in my family, there are a lot of alcoholics, and they admit that they're alcoholic. It's sort of a badge of honor, I think. And so for me, I think I thought that for some reason, even though those people in my family were employed and had houses and cars, for some reason in my mind, I thought you had to be homeless with a paper bag wrapped around some cheap wine, or I don't know what's in those paper bags, quite honestly, because I've never been homeless. But I've heard it's Ripple. I think that's a stereotype. anyway, so what I can share with you is that from as far back as I can remember, I have always felt different than, apart from, and not good enough. And I was never comfortable in my own skin. I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And, you know, I have a memory of my mother asking me to ask a little girl to play at a playground when I was very young. And, you know, there was only two of us on the playground. She was my age. I was probably 5 or 6. I'm shedding everywhere. Excuse me. And I went into complete hysterics, consumed with shyness, total fear of rejection looking back. Now, all I knew then was there was no way I was going to cross that playground and ask that little girl to play with me. And I reacted that way to all social situations. I was debilitated with shyness my entire life. And what happened was, as the years wore on, I watched my father drink away his marriage to my mother. I watched my grandfather drink away a very amazing and potentially memorable acting career down in Hollywood, and I watched all of my father's siblings drink their way into divorces, homelessness, jail, rehab centers, and death. And what happened when I was about 16 years old is that I, on the outside, looked like a very normal little girl. And I had done all the things that I think normal kids do. I played the flute and piano. I was a cheerleader. I was in sports. I had run for student government. I was my class vice president, those kinds of things. On the inside, I was completely uncomfortable. I was completely insane, quite honestly. And so I went to a wedding reception with my mother. She had divorced my father, and she had always said to me, these are the things my mom would always say to me: settle down, Barbie, settle down. She calls me Barbie, settle down. It's okay. Or if I was driving when I first got my license, driving is not a game, because if somebody cut me off at age 16, as soon as I got my license, I was in a fury. That, you know, and I would follow them or I would tailgate them. And not a lot has changed to this day, but I've gotten better. I've gotten better. And driving isn't a game, you know, but that's not why I was doing that. There's something in me, it's almost chemical, that's triggered. I almost feel like a volcano wells up inside of me when it comes to situations where I feel justified or righteous or anger. Anyways, I went to this wedding reception, and there was some very popular kids there. And it's not that I wasn't unpopular or popular or anything. I was just Barb, you know. I just kind of fit in. I always fit in kind of everywhere. Everyone accepted me. And but I felt like I didn't fit in. And all the kids were over at a kitchen table, and one of the boys, Dennis R. I always say his name. I should no longer say his name because we are recording, just in case he comes in someday. Pushed a big glass of beer across the table. All I remember is that the room felt hostile. I did not feel a part of. I didn't feel popular. I didn't feel good enough. I was on the outside. And I drank that beer, probably, you know, a third of it. I gulped it down straight out of the gates. Boy, I'll tell you, it was about getting it in my system always, because I knew I'd get in trouble if my mom saw, because she'd just divorced a practicing alcoholic. And physically, it felt like something very hot attached itself to my shoulders. and it went kunk on my shoulders and then went out my arms and down my back. And that room, those people were the same. Nobody left the room and got a new personality or, nothing changed. But something in me shifted, and suddenly I was comfortable in that room. I felt completely at ease. I felt popular enough. I felt comfortable in my own skin. I felt like I had a right to be there. I felt funny. I just felt a part of. And I had never, honestly, ever felt that in 16 years of life. Now, I did not know that my alcoholism was in full bloom before I ever took a drink. Alcohol, what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is that alcohol is but a symptom. And at that time, alcohol became my solution. And I chased that feeling for the next 12 years. And, I did all the things that a blossoming alcoholic does. As soon as I graduated high school, after sneaking around because you sign a code of conduct, I was always afraid I was going to get kicked off of cheerleading and sports, etc. Never got caught. Went to college, and here's what I decided. I had done all these things in high school that limited my ability to be my true self by this code of conduct, signing this little code of conduct. When I went to college, I just wanted to just be left alone. And what I was really saying was, I just want to be able to drink without getting in trouble. And that's precisely what I did. And I took a 4-year bachelor's degree. It took me 5 years. I was asked to not come back to the University of Delaware, where I went to on exchange. Turns out you're supposed to go to class. And the reason I went back east was because I heard that the drinking age was 18 and I was 20, but they changed it that year to 21. But for soft liquors, beer and wine, New York and Washington, D.C., I believe, hadn't changed. So every weekend that I could get enough money together, I went to those cities under the guise of, going for educational purposes. But what I did is I went and I just got blottoed. Vague memories of walking through Washington Park or, with people coming at me, just very dangerous situations. I put myself in very, very dangerous situations as an alcoholic woman. Did graduate college, got a degree in elementary ed. In my senior year, I met a gentleman who was a horrific drunk, and we dated briefly. He was a blackout drunk. He was belligerent. He was really attractive. I loved him when he wasn't drinking, but he was just unacceptable while he was drinking. He got sober 6 months before I graduated college and left for Southern California, because that was going to be the answer. It wasn't me. It was Southern Oregon. It was the state of Oregon. I tried the East Coast, and then it became the East Coast, and I was back on the West Coast. Now it was Oregon that was the problem. I moved to Southern Oregon, stayed in loose contact with this gentleman. He maintained his sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. And for 5 years, I proceeded to do all the things that I swore I would never do with all the people I swore I'd never do them with. I was not promiscuous. And I like to share that because I've met a lot of gals that are ashamed of not being promiscuous. They're like, I wasn't even promiscuous. I'm boring. I wasn't promiscuous. I was... when I drank, I became extremely arrogant, and I felt like I was extremely intelligent. It's not true, but that's what I thought. And I always, every time I drank, when I went into a club, I was a party girl, I used to think, you wish I'd give you my number. I used to dance by myself. In the middle of Los Angeles, these huge clubs, and everyone's, and I'm by myself. I'm so good, I'm better than you. And, because I was drinking Liquid Courage, it changed how I felt. And the funny thing is I couldn't even stand in line unless I, pre-functioned. I had to have alcohol in my body to stand in line to even get into a club. And I've been told that's not maybe necessarily normal. I've also been told that most people don't stand in line drunk to be picked out of a lineup to spend $20 they don't have, to go into a club they don't feel a part of, to dance by themselves and spend money on drinks they can't afford, just, to be considered part of the planet. I guess that's alcoholic. It's my alcoholism anyway. Anyways, I got involved with a guy that had hair longer than mine, and he drove a motorcycle, and I was trying on a new persona when I met him. I had been studious gal, and I had been teacher girl. I substitute taught for a year. I'd been surfer girl. I'd lived at the beach, and now I was trying to be rock and roll girl, the no value girl. I have no values, man. Anything goes. And I met this idiot and proceeded to move him into my home and totally took care of him financially, supported him for about 2 years, moved to Hollywood from the California coast, and proceeded to get into the most violent, horrific situation I'd been in my life. There was as much violence from him to me as there was from me to him. I was abused, and I abused him. It was even Stephen. He was just as bruised and damaged as I was. So I couldn't go to anyone and say, oh, he's hurting me, because the reality was is I was hurting right back, you know. Anyway, during this time period, I was still in touch with that guy from college. And to make a long story short, he and I hooked up as friends. We had never slept together. We were just good friends. In college, we'd never slept together. We just dated. And so this is a big deal to me, because ultimately I ended up marrying him. And it's exciting to have kind of that history with someone as an alcoholic female. And we hooked up in Laguna Hills. I was staying at a friend's house. I was tremendously hungover. We'd gone to bed probably about 3 in the morning, she and I, the night before, and he and his brother and his dad came down to Laguna Hills. And when he got out of his father's car, I physically felt something. And now, I'm alcoholic, mind you, so everything's, you know, theatrics. But I honestly thought to myself, I'm going to marry him. And I'd known him probably about six and a half years. He lived in Portland, Oregon. I lived down there. I proceeded to go home from that weekend. He and I hung out for a few hours, and I was completely just, I don't know, I feel like I'm going to give credit to God, to my higher power, because the reality is that in college I could not be with this guy because he was too big of a partier. Then he became sober, so he was boring. And so, you know, and I don't know what came over me, but I was going to marry this guy. So, and mind you, I'm living with someone. And, you know, we're together. I went home. I quit my job, moved out during my lunch break. Because I'm an alcoholic female, and maybe normal women do that, I don't know. But ended up moving up to Portland, Oregon. And this man had 5.5 years sobriety, and I moved into his apartment in Northwest Portland, and I proceeded to bring my alcoholism with me. And he asked that I not drink in his home. He didn't know I was alcoholic, because I've never had a DUI. I've never been in jail. You know, my outsides appeared normal. But if you could cut me open and see what was in there, my emotions, my soul, my spirit, you would see that it was just a black hole, that everything had died, that everything was gone, that there was nothing left inside of me. I had exhausted everything. And alcoholics that are alcoholic like me understand that feeling of just, you know, just blackness. There was just nothing. And I think within a very few weeks, I said to him, I won't drink. It's no big deal. I want to be with you. I don't need to drink. And within a very short period of time, the police had been called on us, and we had a huge fight. Someone thought we were killing each other, so the cops came. And I like tried to jump out of the car. We were driving down 23rd for theatrics, and I always did that kind of stuff. If I could break a bone or bleed, then maybe you'll feel sorry for me. That was my thinking. And this guy, I don't know, and I'm going to say that this was God. I'm learning the longer I'm sober that there is a God. I'm not it. My husband's not it. That was huge. And I believe that this came from God. This man said to me at about 2:30 in the morning, after probably another exciting night of battling, because I was trying to convince him that he was broken. You know, he's 5.5 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm freshly off the streets of Hollywood, essentially. And so I need to teach him how to live. And he said to me, he said, geez, Barb, if you were to drink again, what would you do? And I was so full of fear and so broken in my disease that I couldn't even leave our apartment to go and find boxes for us to move. We moved to another apartment eventually. I was so full of fear that I couldn't go to Fred Meyer and say, do you have any extra boxes? I had to take paper bags from shopping, and that's how we moved from one apartment to another. It was paper bags. And we asked a mutual friend, and after that day, he's like, what the hell is wrong with you? You know? And he had like shin splints, his legs were, you know, we were all dying with paper bags carrying them up. And I mean, it was just ridiculous. And, you know, and from the outside, you know, if you say to someone, gee, look at that girl moving with all the paper bags, and someone wouldn't say, oh, she's probably alcoholic. But that's alcoholism for me. That is my inability to function in the world, to just be a part of the world. And so that night or morning, he said, what would you do if you could drink? And he said to me, you know, you've sworn off drinking, and He said, if your dad, your mother had sworn off drinking, how did this go? What would you do if your mom had sworn off drinking? What would she do? She's a normie. She's not alcoholic. I said she would go and she'd have a grasshopper drink, some sort of mint drink. And my mom matches consumption to evaporation, neck and neck. She is not alcoholic. She does not obsess on someone else's drink two tables away. She does not have to have alcohol to be in a social situation. She did not go to her 10-year high school reunion, bring a six-pack even though there's kegs there, and have a complete hissy fit because someone took one of her six-pack, even though there's a keg there, because I have to have my alcohol. I have to have it to be a part of. And he said, well, what would your dad do? I don't know if this is in the right order. Anyway, and I said, you know, he would probably go down to Santa Fe, have a double shot Corvo Gold with a beer back, and, you know, he would then go to the Mission Theater and have a quart of beer. He asked me what I would do, and I said, I'd probably go down to Santa Fe and have a double shot Corvo Gold. Oh. And the fact is my whole life, my dad from that family that I told you was proud to be alcoholic, not proud like bragging, but my dad's family just says, I'm alcoholic. You got a problem with that? Piss off, you know? And I looked at my then fiance. I said, my God, I think I'm alcoholic. Am I alcoholic? And he said, it's a self-diagnosed disease. Thank God. Because if anyone would have told me before that, up until that very moment that I was alcoholic, I would have said, piss off. And so I called the hotline. The next day I went to an AA meeting. I immediately felt a part of. I raised my hand as being at my first AA meeting. And the people there shared about their alcoholism. They did not share about sex addiction, heroin addiction, overeating, cocaine use. They shared about their alcoholism. I was there as a newcomer to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I believe if they would have shared on anything else, I might be dead right now. It was over 12 years ago, and I was not on a road that was leading me to sobriety. I initially felt like it was an accident. I even got into AA. And I have been going to Alcoholics Anonymous ever since. In the last 12 and a half years, I have had the journey that I think all people have in recovery, and that journey is called life. It's in session. And I didn't have any expectations of sobriety, but the longer I was sober, I started to want to have sort of a reward situation with God. I got sober, so I want to have this, 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 and this. And nowhere in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous does it talk about being given rewards specifically. However, it does talk about promises, and that's something that I would like the topic to be tonight, and I'm going to read out of the Big Book. And when I first got sober, they had the promises on the wall of the place that I got sober at, and I remember sitting there and reading them. And here's the deal: they were taken out of the Big Book and put on the wall. They were out of context, because when I read them, I thought, "What an order! That will never happen for me." And you know, I felt like, poor, poor me, basically. Those promises will never happen for me. What I didn't understand is that they were the result of doing the journey and the work in Alcoholics Anonymous, doing the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous in order with a sponsor, someone that's been there before me, and going to meetings, suiting up and showing up, and being of service. My first service position was making coffee at a meeting, doing the things that are suggested in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, if you're new tonight, and welcome to the people that are in their first 30 days, you know, what I learned here is that I have to take actions in things that I don't believe in, that I don't believe will result me anything, least of all these promises that I'm about to read. But what I do get to do is I watch you guys. When they say, if you want what we have, I didn't understand what that meant. I thought it meant the obvious things, the car you drove up in, the man or woman that's on your arm, the jewelry on your body, the clothing you wear, the education that you have, etc. Because those are the obvious things, you know. That makes sense if you want what we have. I didn't understand that it was deeper lying than that. That, you know, when I say to somebody, sponsee, if you want what I have, I'm not being vain. What I'm saying is that most of the time, as a result of doing the steps in order, reading this book, having a sponsor, finding a power higher than myself, suiting up and showing up, being of service, you know, and being a participant in Alcoholics Anonymous, most of the time I'm comfortable in my own skin. And because of that, I do not have to drink. Because of that comfort, I do not have to create the wreckage that causes me to become full of remorse and fear, and, you know, go back to that place that I like to refer to as pitiful and incomprehensible. And only alcoholics can relate to that. I have tried to relate this to my non-alcoholic mother. I have tried. You know, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Even if she's had that, she's like, huh? You know, she just kind of walks through life. You know, I mean, it's just like, whatever. Me, I hit a wall, I do something pitiful and incomprehensible, and I throw it in my sack. And it's spiky, and it's heavy, and I have that sack on my shoulder, and if I'm not in the center of this program, I drag that behind me. And pretty soon, I become so uncomfortable and so exhausted that I have no choice but to pick up a drink. Or, here's another option, kill myself. I mean, that's what's out there for me. I know this. I know this because I've come to these rooms and I've listened to the people that are ahead of me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me read the promises to you, and I'm sure a lot of people have heard these. And tonight I flipped through my 12 and 12 and my big book, and a lot of things popped out. And if there was anybody in their first, second, or third meeting, I would have chosen an entirely different topic. But these promises were profound for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're sitting here thinking, it's not going to work for me, my case is different, bull. That's a lie. I know that to be a lie because I sat there and did the same thing. To me, that's self-pity. I know that too because there should be a poster on every building saying, self-pity, Barb, and there's a picture of me. Because, you know, even to this day, I work it. I work it. It's not very attractive on someone that's sober, but I try. It says, if we were painstaking about this phase of our development, and this is after, the first five steps, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And then it asks, and please don't chant in, are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And that last part, for me, is key, if we work for them. For me, that has meant that I suit up and show up for Alcoholics Anonymous. And the way that that has looked for me for over 12 years is that I come to these rooms, and I open my ears, and I allow myself to be teachable. And if you're new to these rooms, I hope that you're teachable tonight. If you're here, then you probably have a sneaking suspicion you're alcoholic, or if you're me, you're convinced, completely convinced that you are alcoholic. What I would like the topic to be would be people to share within the different things that are mentioned within the promises. And those start on page 83. I don't have it memorized. Please feel free to look in the big book and make reference to that. And thank you for letting me be of service.